Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
In this episode, I'm going to talk about the quantum mechanics of glass, and as you can hear, it's an episode while driving. It's also a new form of episode where it's... I'm going to give the podcast software a really complicated task. So I'm halfway through podcasting about from New Scientist, and that's will be broken up into probably three or four little podcast sets which have to be stitched together, which has to be stitched together with a fourth one summary, which has to be then taken and put up front. So I've got the summary and it goes all together cleanly. And also, so I've got the software to do that. And also, it's got to pick up this software, this podcast, differentiate it and publish it as a second item there. So that may be asking a bit much. I think I've got the maths of it right to do it. That's what I'm going to try to do. And I suppose one of the things I hear there, I better increase the volumes. So the way that I can increase the signal-to-noise ratio is I can't do much about the noise, but I can increase the signal, the noise going in. So what I've been doing recently, and it's these awful, awful podcasts on quantum mechanics. And I realised that I was describing people about how there's sort of a social repression of the maths of social, of quantum mechanics, i.e. that people, when they can't remember doing the maths, they don't understand the maths, they tend to question your authority. And I just happened to read a article in New Scientist about memory, and they said human memory is different in that they attach an order. When you memorize something, you memorize how you remember it and the authority and the clarity of it. This is to that you have to memorize two things. You have to remember what happened, where you were, your role in it, and this gives you sort of like a memory currency. So you're there with memories. That your memories is currency to go forward, and it's legitimization. Now I just want to expand that. So you may say on such and such a event, an aircraft made an emergency landing, and that you may remember that happening. Now, there are several things. One is that you could be in actually here with people and gossiping, and they say, "Oh, look, this aircraft, it stopped for a while." Or you may see it on the news, so you're remembering where, or you may have been in the aircraft, or you may have been the emergency crew, or the process there. So this information is always associated with a tag. And so this is interesting because a lot of the information I read in New Scientist is not scientific. It is so-and-so, and he is a worker, and he is doing this. It's giving you the autobiographical content besides the actual stuff. And so, to a certain extent, my autobiographical memory of quantum physics is being able to pursue it in a autobiographical vacuum. That is, people just not being really sensitive to the fact that, I suppose that's what you call, many people call autism. I just call it just plain old, common old variety intelligence. You know, like, if you see a solution, and the solution sticks with you, and you can't be wiped away from it, the ability of people wiped away, I don't know. It's just, I think it's a multiple factor thing. If you can understand something, it's got more significance. It's like if you know music, you can pick up a tune a little bit better. I'll just have to pick up here. So I'm going to have to stop here really quietly because I've got to stop the Hills Village.
Sorry, back again. Yeah, I sort of no longer interpret sort of the antagonism towards quantum mechanics and new physics as something personal. I just think it is the way society sticks with what it has. It knocks off radicals. It knocks off people. It separates them. And I think people who are politically adept or in that area have become very sophisticated. When you've got scientists and educators doing it, they're not as artful. And so it's a bit more clunky, a bit more obvious. And so so when you understand an equation, or understand how something works, and no big deal, because you don't know that you're the only person to have understood it. You, for all you know, that you're the last person in the room to understand it. And then it's this realization that other people don't necessarily understand it and working through it to come through. So this is part of the story on how we describe these quantum mechanical electrons, and you can definitely have a lot of fun with them. They're very beautiful. They're beautiful things to behold. They're in fact functions. They have no surfaces. They've got this rotational symmetry of S2 symmetry we're talking about. They're separable of all this attribute, and then they can change shape, change the number of folds in them. So fold nodal lines from P to D, or these are the axial nodal lines, or there's radial nodal lines. That's the order of them. It can be all of that sort of thing, and you can see what's going on. And when you see and understand it, you get to a point looking at the spectrograph, looking at the line produced, and say, ah, I understand that. And then that is what, now I understand what this is I've been taught. And now the thing is that you're not aware that the people who teach you the things have a superficial, only a superficial glancing understanding of the equation. They interpret equations as the law discovered by another person in authority. They have a constructed memory at a particular way of constructing their memory, which seems perfectly valid to them. So their memories are valid because they have created ordered biographical component to their memory. So they say, I remember this authority. And then when they don't have the authority, they then have inferred or secondary or tertiary authorities. So, person coming along and saying, look, see my speed, right, because there's going to be speed cameras coming around here. So they can, you can see that, and it puts you at automatically, you and if you want to listen to this, it puts you at automatically conflict with things. It's sort of like it's an alternative route to truth, that is mathematics. So I think in many people have a barrier to knowing things. So the barriers might be that a big barrier to knowing things is if it affects their lifestyle. If say their lifestyle, they're going to have to do without something or change their things. Their ability to learn when it hurts them is very great. Their ability to learn when it might affect their social structure is very, very great. The ability to learn which may challenge their legitimacy is very, very great. There's all these things which go across it. But there is this ability to learn if you just see the maths. It's not that complex. It is complex because it's hard to get over, say, if you've been trained not to look at something because it will challenge you. So I'm just stopping at the moment. I'm having a bit of a sip of a drink as I drive.
so I can't really, I can drive and speak, but I can't drive, drink and speak at the same time. There's big gaps there. So, there's this sort of, it's actually a good thing in a way, because you become socially isolated. People go, oh, I don't want to talk to you, and they leave you very quietly alone, just the way you need to be in the lab looking at these various things. Now, one of the things that really confused me is glass physics. So, what's glass physics? Well, glass is the most quantum mechanically alive thing you could add. So, so you imagine, I don't know, imagine solid state is like living with Mormons, fictitious Mormons, where everyone thinks the same, dresses the same, and this fictitious view of Mormons, come on, drop down, 50. Not the school zone, that's great. Okay. So imagine that you have you have breakfast with one Mormon family. So okay, you say goodbye, and then you, after saying goodbye to them, you move on to your next Mormon family, and you have breakfast again, and they have the same conversation. They store their plates in the same way, so you move on. Okay, just turn around here. Whoa, it's a bit hard to actually hold something and do. They live in exactly the same way. Therefore, your experience, you can do a lot of things like Groundhog Day, being in each unit cell, it's Groundhog Day, but the knowledge is different. It means that once you do something, you can get into it, and essentially, if you like it, you can find a way to say defraud them at $50. Once you've done that, you can keep on doing it, going from room to room. And that's sort of touching in a little bit on the description of a, say, light inside a crystal. And the light can go inside a crystal, light can definitely go inside a crystal. And, say you've got a salt crystal, light can go in a salt crystal, light can go in a, lithium fluoride crystal, calcite crystal can travel through, but light traveling through glass is a totally different prospect. So that is, my friends, like going from hippie center to hippie center. Every section of glass is really completely different from the last year you've gone, and you have to work out your orders, and you can't. You can't use your trick from one trick to the next. And it means a hell of a lot of things that glass can have memory, and glass can have so many things into it. So that's crystals, which is metal, is a crystal. Have a Fermi surface in a metal. Silicon looks dark, but it's transparent to infrared light. How about that? Its band gap is such that it absorbs visible light, but obviously, which is an important thing, but it doesn't absorb other types of light. I'm just trying to describe glass is really the hippie version of quantum mechanics, and electrons can go to an elevated point. But because it's the electrons are waves and glass itself is unwaved, it's disordered rubbish, its storage inside it is, I just sort of describe it, local, very limited local order or voids. It's actually easier to think of electrons going in a new area of glass, in new areas of glass, and I call it voidon. That's my own personal theory. I only call it that. I'm not calling it as a claim as a new theory. It's just my way of actually describing what's in glass, and I call the voidons in glass. Now, why voidon is here we go, coming in. Now, so we'll finish pretty soon here, just checking. Okay, so so the quantum mechanics, besides explaining phenomena, it also gives a rich view which allows you to see things which are not ideally quantum mechanical. So glass would have to be the least amenable to quantum mechanical treatment, because quantum mechanics, the stuff of quantum mechanics is waves, and therefore a periodic, waves are periodic, and so you are in seventh heaven if you have a periodic matter. So periodic matter and periodic material like silicon, pure crystals of silicon or metals, it's periodic goes together beautifully well, and the quantum mechanics leads to these beautiful barriers and sounds. So if you can imagine inside a silicon, silicon crystal, it's been like inside a concert hall, a grand concert hall that sounds crisp, they echo, the sound can travel from one end to the other. In fact, electricity can travel. Electricity, sound can travel in a concert hall. But glass is the equivalent of hippies. Another way I'd say is a bazaar, where you walk around and it's just higgledy-piggledy, it's all over the place. Now, hopefully, I'll remember where I came off when I finish this medical appointment. Welcome to the second part of this episode, which is dealing with quantum perceptions. You know, what you have a perception as when you do quantum physics, does it affect you? And look, I think all knowledge you have affects you. So once you can add things up, you can see that you're shortchanged. As a kid, you can sort of only detect things purely in a value sense, that you can check that so-and-so's got as many lollies as you did, but you mightn't be able to tell the difference between a jelly bean and a Lindor ball. Eventually you will, if you slowly build it up. So knowledge essentially builds, and there's a social idea to knowledge, that the knowledge, like memories, have to become with a certain credibility value with it. So it's sort of unlike data going into a computer, data going into a social computer has to have the address, memory address, where it's stored, the credibility to know how to handle it. Like an IP address of the data, there's a social IP address of the IP, which is the internet service provider, you know, where it routes to. You have to, it has to know that it's actually of value. Okay, I'm turning on lights at the moment. It's going to be a bit stormy here. So we're talking about the quantum mechanical feel of a crystal versus an amorphous object like glass. And rather than diving into all the equations, what does it feel like? A crystal sounds like an opera house, and glass, in terms of holding the waves and the sound waves, is more like a localized bazaar or busy restaurant where the conversations last in a certain area And the sound can build up and can move and do all these sorts of things, but it behaves fundamentally differently. And like an opera auditorium, like inside the opera house, where the sound can travel freely across, and the woman or person singing on the opera stage, the sound can travel all the way up, and you can actually, everyone can hear the sound, and it's an all communal thing. Each region is incredibly unique, and the electrons, which are quantum objects which have waves and work really well in free space where it's not controlled, or the second best is they're inside a crystal where they can also travel freely inside that crystal. So there are two instances of zero resistance, i.e. absolute zero resistance. One is a superconductor, and the other is an electron in free space. I don't know why people don't say that. Electron free space is basically superconducting for electrons. There is no resistance to it. If I get an electron, there is absolutely no voltage drop between two points in free space of that electricity flowing. There is zero resistance. I don't know why people say that, and therefore they can't quite see how this operates. Okay, we're coming into a school zone at the moment. Okay, so I'm just trying to give you the impression, a look and a feel of the different quantum mechanical feel between, okay, in there, between a glass and a crystal. Silicon crystal is see-through. Now, in infrared, silicon is a glass in infrared. So if depends. I don't know whether it is transparent to very long wavelengths, like 10 micron wavelengths. Or centimeter wavelengths. The heat that you get off a match, the heat that you can feel from afar, that radiation is long wavelength. So I don't know infrared, but infrared definitely is. The silicon crystal is definitely transparent, like glass, to 1 micron radiation around that top stuff. That 1 micron goes through it beautifully. It's 1023. Nanometers, where it's a 1 micron radiation, is 1 EV. Just basically, that's a basic take-home fact. 1 micron, 1 EV, roughly speaking. And so half micron's roughly 2 EV, quarter micron's 4 EV, if you get the drift. An eighth of a micron, roughly speaking, is 1/8 of a micron. Is that right? 1 micron. Yeah, it is. 1/8. It's a reciprocal thing. 1/8 of a micron is 8 EV, just roughly speaking. Okay, there's a slight difference to actually pick it up. What a lovely thing that is. So we're getting into knowing. I've just sort of talking through the cognitive stuff that came up, and they've picked up sort of a mild form of synesthesia, whatever it is. That's where you see a colour or feel a situation differently to the mathematics. And I just picked up, just made sort of an idle comment that imagining equations where I used to imagine them in green colour, sort of very positive green colour, I'm just beginning to imagine equations in an orange and red colour. I don't quite know what that means, but when I imagine equations, I can actually see some parameters change, vary a little bit as I imagine them in one eye as opposed to another eye. So I can see that. Now that sounds really, really crazy. It led to a discussion of perception and what people... This is going at a funeral pace. I don't understand what's going here. So someone's travelling at 10 kilometres an hour up the top here. I think it could well be possibly backed up all the way here. And so it's true for electrons. I sort of see them... I sort of can imagine them in the whole wave function of it. And I tend to, like most people, imagine electrons as yellowy. I think yellowy might be the colour. But there is a certain level of different ways of imagining it. Now, which is really interesting. I think actually people have, if it's culturally... in the centre of their culture, it's an idea. There's a tolerance of different ways of describing things either side, and people know sufficient ways that they can tolerate some sort of bandwidth. But if it's outside their general knowledge, things there's a very tight bandwidth. Particularly, people apply to your ways of description, the description of things. So people will tend to be. I have found a very defensive about. Different descriptions of electrons and potentials and stuff like that. But you see phenomena and you have this imagining of the function. It's interesting that I had this really sort of intense discussion with someone about electrons doing computing, and electrons compute and find a solution. Discussing with this person that, you know, you add more things and my computer is finding a solution, the electron finds a solution, my computer has found a solution to this precise project, the electron's found a different solution. Now, the thing is that a wave function, an electron, is a solution. There is actually no gap between those two concepts about whether something is a solution or not. An electron is a solution of a wave. Its existence is a solution to the Schrodinger wave equation. It's not that, and it is a definitive solution. Now, I can come up with a solution set, sort of like a screwdriver set, and of particular solutions. Very much, if you buy a screwdriver set, you can have Phillips head or flathead. This person, for a long time, spun up some information which I accepted. Someone's called Paul Robinson. I said, what is the name of a screwdriver? That's a Phillips screwdriver. What is the name of a flathead screwdriver? And he said, a Robinson screwdriver. And I took that on. I said, thanks for that information. And off I went, telling lots of people Robinson. It's only later that I realised that, hang on, I'm not seeing this information repeated anywhere else, that I realised that he was having a lend. Thank you, Paul Robinson, for doing that. But similarly, you can imagine your set of solutions a bit like a screwdriver set. You can have Phillips heads or flatheads for space and momentum and different sizes for different positions. And essentially anything can be solved with your screwdriver set, but your... your atoms constructed. It's getting around here. There's no way that I've tried to merge with this type of traffic. Here we're up and running. I think I'll be ahead of these people who are taking more aggressive king of the road viewpoint. Here we go across. Now the great thing about this is I've been sitting on a red light for a while, so they've been doing the waiting for me. Thank you very much. Let's turn an amber here. And we go. Now, there goes a point for you about lights. So, a long time ago in Australia, we began to put in automatic lights. So this is in the 20s. And the first set of lights we put in Australia were not red, white, and so red, amber, green. It's stop, slow, go. No, they were indeed a clock with a timer on, and the clock would just go around once every 2 minutes or 3 minutes, so you could see the frequency change, and it would go past, and when the second hand was in the stop section, you'd stop, and second section slow, and start, and you could actually look up, and you would know, I've got 10 seconds waiting here, I've got so many seconds waiting here. So the streets of Australia used to be actually stopped by these lights, and that's an example of a solution system, a consistent solution system here, and then that's been replaced by the red, amber, green section. Now, obviously, that particular solution system, I should imagine, would have a wind-up mechanism. You could actually wind this up, and this would work. So, it was in the museums, and I was with someone who's from those old days, and he said, oh, they were fantastic. Firstly, they didn't work particularly well at night because they weren't illuminated, but during the day, they're great. You could go up to them and actually see what's going on. Can't imagine dealing with too much traffic or too many different lanes for a road back there. And I sort of remember in Melbourne, growing up in Melbourne, and in the 70s, there was one skyscraper, which is the Myer Building at the very corner of Melbourne. And so this is hard to imagine. Melbourne had, I think, the SEA government building, which is high school. There were only two skyscrapers in Melbourne when I grew up. And then, of course, things just went ballistic, and I've gone completely mad since then. I can't get past the speed. Okay, so what does a... I suppose it gives you some idea to feeling of, you know, what's this guy describing, these quantum mechanical things to me. I'm actually saying, look, there's different solution sets out there, and those solution sets that you're allowed to experience is a function of your social position. It is very much that there are two electrons here. There's the actual electron as it exists, and you as you exist. You exist in a matrix of social controls which allow you to have a certain solution set. Like, you are you no matter what happens, but you can be defined by different social parameters which unfortunately for you determine how much you can think and go. This is really philosophical. However, let's look at the electron in a piece of glass or a piece of sperm, for instance. Anything disordered, it will tend to glow in ultraviolet light. That's right, fluorescent ultraviolet light. So when they, I think in Japan, they sell discrete UV light for wives so they can go through and do a UV scan to pick up, telltale signs of sperm or something like that. It glows. Now, let's move away from sperm and move to glass, because that's a bit better. Now, glass is sort of like, say if you were tasked to build a skyscraper out of flimsy material, and you could build it so high that the material would flimse and flex and bend, particularly if you had your rods had a angle in them and they could spin around at different angles, so you wouldn't build it. I think it would be all flimsy. And as glass is strong, it's solid. Glass is disordered. That's what glass means. Something which is disordered. It doesn't have a unit cell. It's chaotic. It's amorphous. It's beautiful, beautiful material. But the actual bonds between two silicon atoms is an oxygen. It's SO2. Overall, but each silicon atom bonds to four other silicon atoms, just as it would in pure silicon, but each in between each of those bonds is an oxygen. And don't ask me quite how this actually works, but it's SO2. Now those lengths of those bonds can actually change and move, and you can actually restructure, like silly putty glass, to move in a particular direction by aligning these bonds, and your glass can move up, and strains can build, micro strains can build up. You can build it up so much so that it expands. It's sort of like this gooey putty, and it's quite an interesting thing. It's like doesn't have a distinct solid liquid transition. In fact, the term, I don't know, solid and liquid, oh, going 40 kilometers an hour again, doesn't really apply. Well, really, a lot of the terms that we use for solid and liquid, we actually do mean glass or crystalline. So the energy of an ice cube turning into water, that distinct phase transition, is between the crystalline water and the amorphous crystalline ice and the amorphous water. The energy is the entropy energy there between the big massive distance is the increased entropy of water, which is high entropy, and the structure of the energy going into reducing the entropy of ice. So ice is this amazing thing. It's got a lot of people's world is really highly confused. So if we can go back to get very far on this one, if we could go just wait for it, I'll describe what happens to an electron when it's hit with a photon, with light, a photon in glass. It tends to glow and it tends to structure those bonds around in a very unique way, and you can see it, you can feel it, you can get into it with quantum mechanics. It's similar to someone trained in classical music who plays classical music can really drift and float away in when they hear an orchestra going along. So here you've got quantum mechanics and you see something fluorescent, it changes in fluorescence. That is fluorescent, the UV light comes in, that glows yellow, and it does it in different ways with different polarization lights. It really is much like listening to a symphony orchestra. It is a fantastic feeling. It's sort of the greatest thing you could possibly ask for. When we're coming home, we're not going to last this long, so I'm going to have to knock this one off for you, mate. So, look, in general, there is this view, and the interaction of light into glass is so much more impact. It's sort of like going back to your opera house. The light goes into silicon and everything can hear it, everyone can hear it, they can respond, they can clap at the same time. But the light going into, say, a marketplace of glass where everything's individualized, it changes the conversations at the individual tables and the mood of the entire glass changes and it's recorded. Whereas light going into silicon, it gets immediately converted into energy, into photons, into electrons traveling in different ways in the crystal. It's processed very much, ready for the next photon to come in. But in glass, so many other things happen because it is disordered, and there's no point having an emotional feeling. Well, I myself don't have an emotional feeling. I have an empathy with what happens in glass and in crystals and stuff like that. And we're getting home very soon. So, look, I promise that I will continue this at some stage soon. I hope you're okay. Come on, matey. Okay. So this is just one of these icky corners. So what's happened is that there's been a highway, right, and then we've built a proper highway right next to it. So we have this domestic road going right next to this highway, and of course there is this sort of a space that you need between the two roads in order to get turning rights and lights and stuff like that, and that's just proved a headache with time. And so you have this thing where you have turned off the highway onto the service road, and then you have to give way to things on the service road, and then you have cars coming up with me, coming up behind you to do it all. So, for me, I find it fascinating in that I observe different quantum phenomena and let the maths speak for itself, and it's a very private thing. And so you experience the actual wave function, and you experience a social function on the outside. You can solve the wave function, you can't solve the social problems. You can know that the social problems, well, that's not working. Well, I'm not getting any reward for that. People aren't interested in that. Well, that's the current's not going to flow. There's a social resistance, very much like a current resistance. Going through, here we go around the corner here. Let's see how it's happening up here. It's end of school time, so there mightn't be. I'm just in front of a school. So there's sort of like this same methodology of understanding electrons in different crystals. I sort of understand ideas in different social crystals. And in essence, as people imagine electrons in a classical way and don't get very far in their actual physical crystal, they're actually in a social crystal with laws they have imagined. And unlike a physical system where it will do what it does, it will follow the physical system, and it is, and the solution are not separate. In a social system, there's a complex interplay between the solutions that you allow and how you can think about it and what's allowed. But very similar to glass, glass has a memory. So silicon, really, you can blast it with light for years and years, nothing will happen. Glass will memorize it. It's got a memory of the radiation hit into it. It's got a memory, and so too social systems have this memory aspect to them, that people remember the significance and become hardened to certain processes coming through to them. So there's this beautiful parallel. Now this may be a bit philosophical. I'm sorry if I haven't explained it very well, but let's keep on going. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.